This is the Lou Rockwell Show.
It's great to have Dr. Robert Higgs on the show today. Bob Higgs is an important economist and historian, author of more than 20 books, senior fellow at the Independent Institute, editor of the Independent Review, adjunct scholar for the Mises Institute. Take a look at his archive, by the way, on Mises.org. Columnist for LouRockwell.com. Take a look at his archive on LRC. Bob last year was the recipient of the Schlarbaum Prize from the Institute for Lifetime Achievement and Liberty. Bob, you've been writing a lot recently about this financial crisis created by the Federal Reserve and all those people who are going to benefit illegitimately from it and the plans the government has in mind for us. And you've called the people on Wall Street engaged in promoting this bailout a bunch of pirates. Are they really going to board our ship and sink us?
Well, I think there's a definite risk of that, Lou. The thing I think that is perhaps most interesting about the present so-called crisis is that it really isn't a crisis. It's, in my judgment, a bogus crisis. The claim is that unless the Fed and the Treasury leap into the situation with gigantic bailouts for all sorts of financial institutions and perhaps for others as well, the whole economy is going to seize up or collapse or somehow fall into a black hole. And this kind of claim is preposterous. If the Fed evaporated overnight, if it just disappeared into thin air and people had to manage without it, we would be enormously better off. There would be adjustments, of course, but people are not fools, and there are a lot of smart people in the world, and they would devise alternative institutions that would not have the destructive downsides that the Federal Reserve System has had and continues to have. So the idea that the future is too horrible to contemplate, that's a term I've heard, unless the government undertakes these gigantic interventions, is, I think, a completely bogus idea, and current conditions do not warrant this kind of panic. I believe the authorities, aided by the media, are attempting to stampede the public into accepting what's being done. And in my view, what's being done is a gigantic robbery. Talk about great train robberies. This is going to, I think, make all previous robberies look tiny by comparison, because the amounts of money at stake here are mind-boggling.
Some of the people who want to also be bailed out in addition to the financial institutions are General Motors and Ford and Chrysler. But you know, it's interesting, in the automotive industry, let's say, and it's certainly not a good thing, but let's say General Motors goes bankrupt. That not only does that not threaten Honda or Toyota or the other car companies, they might actually secretly be glad to be rid of a competitor. Yet when some big financial institution like Lehman Brothers goes down, all the rest of them are indeed threatened. So why is this?
Well, there's an official story that somehow all of these big banks are necessary for the functioning of the entire financial system. That's the kind of overarching myth that's used to justify what's being done. I think it's closer to the truth to say that these big boys got themselves in big trouble by making very foolish investments in a lot of securities that at bottom rested on bad mortgages. And of course the bad mortgages were wrapped into packages and sliced and diced and transformed into derivatives and derivatives of derivatives and so forth, because there was a gigantic amount of money to be made at every stage of the financial process of creating and marketing these new financial instruments. So these big boys that are now begging to be paid off for their losses by the taxpayers have reaped gigantic amounts of money during the past 5 or 6 years from what we now see as having made huge blunders. So the logic of what they're asking for boils down to the fact that you must help me. You must give your money to me because I made very big mistakes, whereas you made smaller mistakes. I find that a bizarre logic, and it's interesting that quite a number of people seem to be catching on that this is precisely what is happening, and that they're being taken for a ride. I don't know whether it's going to matter because our government has a splendid capacity for totally disregarding what the great mass of the people want or what is good for the great mass of the people, and instead acting in the service of the plutocrats. But at all events, it's interesting to see that not everybody in the public is being misled by the current events.
Well, I guess it is too open a robbery by the plutocracy for them to get away with it. Although I heard an interesting comment on CNBC yesterday, the guys talking about blah, 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 you know, the bailout, blah, 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 the bailout. And then he actually said, oh, I'm supposed to call it a rescue. So he's interviewing somebody. So as to the rescue, you know, and of course, how can you be against a rescue, right? You can't let the person drown.
Well, we've all learned to think of the government as our savior. And not only our rescuer of last resort, but our rescuer of first resort. And when we look at these financial difficulties that some of the big banks and investment banks and brokers and related companies have gotten themselves in, we could go back, for example, 100 years and say, well, what happened when, not the same difficulties, but similar kinds of difficulties arose in 1907? Well, the financial firms of that time sorted it out. They got together. They pooled resources. They made emergency loans available to banks they thought were sound and could repay those loans after the crisis had passed, and so forth. Now, unfortunately, those events, although private enterprise did manage them quite astutely, I think, they did set in motion political machinations by the J.P. Morgan crowd and others that eventually led to the creation of the Federal Reserve System, because some of the bankers at that time, of course, realized that, well, yes, we can manage these crises ourselves, but wouldn't it be better if we had the power of government as one of our tools to use when we go about attempting to protect ourselves in financial crises? So that gave us, unfortunately, the Fed. And now, thanks to the Fed, these bankers turn immediately to that source of bailout whenever they have a problem.
And yet, of course, it's the Federal Reserve's opening the, I was going to say opening the monetary spigot, actually opening the monetary fire hydrant after 9/11 that brought about the whole boom and the craziness in mortgages and the craziness in house pricing and the whole very, very damaging boom earlier in the Bush administration now led to a bust. And so we have now, as the savior, the actual perpetrator, the Federal Reserve. So you have Ben Bernanke. Also, it seems to me alarming, even in our current dictatorship, and we do live under an elected dictatorship, it seems to me, where Ben Bernanke can just seize an American company and decide that the government's going to own it, and everybody thinks it's just fine, talking about the whole AIG business.
Yeah, one of the things I've written about off and on over the years, Lou, is the number of emergency powers statutes that exist in the U.S. Code. Many people, most people, have no idea of the existence of these powers, and they go far back. They go back to World War I in most cases, and these laws have been amended and modified over the years, but they're still a part of U.S. law, and every once in a while, the authorities will drag out one of these provisions that nobody's ever heard of that gives the government or the Federal Reserve System power to do extraordinary things, such as take over a company. And this is, in a way, one of the most dangerous legacies of the government's national emergency management over the years, that whatever harm is done during the crisis is not the end of it. These crises always leave legacies, institutional, legal, constitutional, ideological legacies that, in a sense, lie dormant, awaiting the next crisis when the government can readily seize these powers and do more harm.
Back when I worked for Ron Paul in the late 1970s and early 1980s, he was the only one concerned with the fact that they kept making evergreen the Trading with the Enemy Act that dates from 1917, and they keep amending it and keep polishing it. And this is a law that gives the president pretty much, if he chooses to exercise the power, the power to entirely centrally plan the economy, to decide who can produce what. Or
it does indeed. We now have something called the International Emergency Economic Powers Act, enacted in 1978, and that is the descendant of the Trading with the Enemy Act of 1917. And as you say, that act contains extraordinarily sweeping powers that the president can invoke simply by declaring an emergency. And again, one of the things people don't usually understand is that a lot of emergencies have been invoked and are in force right now, which means that all of these statutory powers are available to the president.
Well, it's alarming to look at the Federal Register, which is all the regulations being issued by various government bureaucracies. But one of the alarming things about it, it's a big, thick publication of the federal government that comes out periodically. There are always any number of presidential emergencies being declared in the beginning part of that issue of the Federal Register. So that you're exactly right. There are any number of emergencies. I know that people on the left, there's a big rumor right now that maybe Bush will declare an emergency and suspend the election. Well, this, in my view, is one thing they would never do, because the whole mythology of democracy is the central core of the legitimacy of the regime. So they certainly don't mind switching the face on the stamp or whatever it is from Bush to McCain or to Obama, because it's the same crowd, the state itself still running everything. But as to declarations of emergency and sweeping powers and very scary things, maybe that, you know, maybe it's possible for Bush to ramp that up using the excuse, as you say, of this bogus financial crisis.
Oh, I think that there's almost no limit to what can be done legally if the president chooses to do it. And what you say about elections is certainly apt, though. I mean, fearing that the Bush administration might cancel the elections or something of that sort is beyond the imagination, I think, for people who understand how the regime works. I believe it was Emma Goldman who said that, you know, if elections could make a difference, they'd be against the law. And that's as true now as it was 100 years ago.
She also said that if she couldn't dance, she wasn't going to the revolution, talking about the puritanism of the Bolsheviks. So, very interesting lady.
I can't agree with Emma on everything, but she did have some good points.
Dr. Bob Higgs, thanks so much for coming on today.
My pleasure, Lou.
Read his books. If you look at any of his articles in his archive at lourockwell.com, you'll see any number of covers of his books at the bottom. Click on them. Every single thing, every word he's ever written is important, and I'll tell you, extremely important and enlightening for the situation we're in today. Bob Higgs, thank you.
Thank you, Lou, for having me.
You've been listening to The Lou Rockwell Show. Produced by LouRockwell.com, the best-read libertarian website in the world. If you'd like to advertise on this podcast or on the website, email advertise@LouRockwell.com. And thanks for listening.